Joseph M. Ashley, a doctor of rehabilitation and nationally recognized industry leader who is blind, brings a personal commitment and over 30 years of leadership in developing services and creating opportunities for individuals with disabilities to support their choice to live, work, and thrive in their communities.
Hello, and welcome to The Blind Experience with Dr. Joe Ashley. We are honored today to have Commissioner Raymond Hopkins as our guest. This is a bookend interview for Commissioner Hopkins, as shortly after he was appointed to his position as Commissioner for the Virginia Department for the Blind and Vision Impaired, DBVI, he did his first interview with the Virginia Voice. Today we're going to talk to Ray about his tenure, almost 14-year tenure, as Commissioner, as he is leaving his current position in May. Ray was first appointed as Commissioner in 2008 by then-Governor Timothy Kaine. He was subsequently reappointed by four governors. This is quite an accomplishment in state government. Prior to being appointed as Commissioner at DBVI, Ray was involved in the administration and delivery of rehabilitation services at the national, state, and local level. He had a variety of experiences that he believes enabled him to do a better job as commissioner. These included being a consumer, a Randolph Shepherd vendor, a rehabilitation service provider, and a manager. All of these together meant he was better prepared to deal with the diverse programming of DBVI. Commissioner Hopkins, welcome to the Blind Experience Podcast.
Dr. Ashley, thank you for that introduction and for the opportunity to join you today.
Now, Ray, you've had a long tenure here at DBVI, and I'm curious, what did you first encounter? What were your first challenges when arriving on the scene at DBVI, and what progress has been made in resolving them?
Well, those challenges from 14 years ago, some of them were fairly significant systemic sorts of issues. Of course, there were some that were more specific to the agency, but a couple that stand out to me.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that the Department for the Blind and Vision Impaired had a reputation of being somewhat insular and was not viewed as a partner in the Commonwealth's workforce development system. Some people didn't even know that DBVI existed, and we certainly felt that we needed a seat at the table as a vocational rehabilitation program and employment services provider. There's an adage, Joe, that if you're not at the table, you're on the table. So we definitely wanted to be more part of the conversation.
So you wanted to be more engaged with the other parts of the workforce system.
Correct. And I would say another just general challenge was the issue of accessibility and across the board having the Commonwealth in its training programs, its information services, and various opportunities for people with disabilities to make those more accessible. And my feeling was it seemed that we were addressing things one issue at a time as opposed to a more broad systemic approach. I would say on the issue of the workforce, thanks to the assistance of folks like yourself, we have made great inroads.
Mm-hmm.
We are definitely part of the workforce system. We have representatives on local labor market boards. We now have inclusion of myself as commissioner on Virginia's workforce development board.
I think that's a huge accomplishment there, Ray. You're the first VR of either agency, VR director, to be on that workforce board, and I think that's huge for people with disabilities.
I agree, and I think it's just symbolic of the acceptance of people with disabilities as part of Virginia's workforce, and understanding that we should be included, and it's not something accidental or incidental.
And our program should be accessible to them.
Yes.
Well, yeah. So, Ray, you made big investments in business services. How has this paid off for the DBVI clients?
Well, our business relations unit, I think, has certainly been helpful to consumers of services as well as for the agency generally. In part, what I just spoke about in terms of being part of the workforce system, I think having DBVI personnel engage with other agencies and looking for workforce solutions for Virginia employers. But more importantly, Joe, it's that idea of having a relationship. It's all about relationships. That post and pray method of recruitment doesn't work real well for our population. So what we find is, by having our staff engaging with hiring officials, with HR professionals, we have created many more opportunities for work-based training, that is, people to get actual work experience. We have seen people gain avenues to careers and businesses that were once closed to us. So I think our consumers are definitely benefiting from the relationships that we have created through our business relations unit.
Yeah, I think you pivoted, it sounds like, from an individual placement model to a staffing solution, which requires that kind of relationship. And your staff, it sounds like, are in a better position to say, here's the skill set that this person has, and have that information be accepted by the businesses.
Well, we certainly are still very much individualized. You know, we work with each consumer. We try to meet them where they are. But we don't have a one-and-done perspective. Our idea is that if we place one person and they do a great job, then it's an opportunity for us to place
another person.
And so we want people to think of us as providing solutions. And we don't look for businesses, employers, to hire individuals who are blind and vision impaired out of sympathy.
Correct.
We believe that we work with people who are qualified and competent, and that's what we introduce to employers or people who are capable of doing the work. It's a win-win. Everybody benefits. And we hope we build relationships with our consumers, then we're better able to present them to employers.
It sounds like a pretty good system for reaching out all the way around. Now, Ray, you've developed a very positive partnership with cyber.org, which is an academic initiative of the Cyber Innovation Center down in Louisiana. Just to be real honest with this, I was a small part in this particular project, and it's one of my favorites. But I'm curious about how you see the advantages for youth with disabilities that you serve in terms of those seeking IT careers. Has this created some new service models, a new way of thinking?
Well, it certainly created a new way of thinking and expanded some of the services we were doing. So, a quick description. We started working with Dr. Chuck Gardner and his team on adapting the curriculum for a specific robotics training so it would be more accessible to students with disabilities. And the first training that we did, and you might recall, Joe, it was interesting thing, but it was great. We had consumers from both VR agencies participate, but I recall the first afternoon, Dr. Gardner saying to a couple of us, we have a problem. And the problem was that the students were going so fast, they were in the first afternoon already where he thought they would be 2 days later.
Yeah.
So he had to quickly revamp and expand the curriculum so that the students could benefit and have a full week of activity. And that was great for us because, one, we took this professional who had taught IT to college students and was going around the country training teachers on how to teach IT and robotics. We taught him that students with disabilities have great potential and that by adapting the curriculum, he expanded a whole new avenue of training and possible careers. And from that first training, several of those individuals who had not done anything related to information technology before left after programming their robots and displaying their skills. Several of them have chosen to enter IT training programs at collegiate level and are pursuing careers. I know one young lady told me she was going to become an engineer. It just opened some doors.
Yeah, it sure seems to.
And we've now evolved, Joe. We've moved on from that robotics. We're now doing Leap into Linux, where we're doing things so people learn about coding and working in Linux. We've had a coding camp, and we are working with Dr. Gardner on a National Science Foundation grant to develop technology curricula that can be made available across the country. So as far as DBVI goes, that was the first, but yes, we've since then have implemented a variety of different technology and science-based programs for students to engage in, learn from, and we're just seeing great benefits from it.
You know, I was sitting next to Chuck at that first session's luncheon, and he said to me that he had to change that curriculum three times to keep up with those students, and he was just amazed with that. And then at the Leap into Linux thing event last summer, I seem to remember him saying that there was a student there developing the website, and the student showed him how to do something he didn't know how to do. I think he continually got impressed by the students.
Well, they are impressive. And as you well know, for so many people with disabilities, it's about an opportunity.
Yeah.
All they need is an opportunity to show what they can do.
And he's been going around. I think he's now an evangelist for these kinds of services, and including kids with disabilities in these curriculum that he develops. I think that's been a national impact of that particular choice that you all made here at DBVI to include a IT expert and then teach him how to make his curriculum more accessible. I think that was a bold decision, and I think it really has paid off nationally for people.
We continue to hear from other states who want to know how we develop that and how they might implement that in their states. And I have to tell you a quick story. Bill Robinson from Michigan.
From Michigan, yeah.
Was part of a panel last year, and he was talking about training that they were planning to do with students in his state last summer. And he started talking about robotics and some different things, and he was looking for his program person to provide a little bit more detail. And he was saying how excited he was. And when she entered the room, she joined him and she said she had been on another call talking about that. But the first thing that she said was, I have to give credit to Virginia because everything we're doing is just copying what Virginia has already accomplished.
That's great. Right. And, you know, there's been a lot of advancements in these last 14 years in assistive technology. Do you think assistive technology has opened up opportunities for people with disabilities, particularly those who are blind and vision impaired?
Well, certainly, and let me say that that certainly goes beyond these past 14 years. You know, we have people with disabilities, individuals who are blind or vision impaired, who are doing work that they couldn't have done a generation ago. We have people in fields that they could not have accessed, wouldn't have imagined accessing a generation ago. Several years ago, I saw a statistic that said over 91% of all jobs in the United States involve some use of computers or technology. Well, when we talk about assistive technology, that's the piece that makes it so that somebody with a disability can use that technology. Perhaps not all of those jobs that use technology are now available to us. I still don't think that they're going to give any blind person a license to fly a plane, but there are so many others that we can do. And yes, that technology is the great equalizer. It gives us the opportunity to do so many jobs. For example, how we're able to get somebody with a background in IT placed with a company like Wells Fargo doing cybersecurity and fraud protection, because they now can go deep into those systems and have access and understand what's going on and help customers.
It gives them equal access.
Oh, yes, yes.
One of the things, Ray, I was curious about, you had a very, I thought, robust response once the COVID-19 hit and in-person services were no longer allowed. I'm wondering if the AT that you had built on made it possible for you to do, I call it a pivot, where you were providing virtual services.
Well, I will say technology generally made that possible. Mm-hmm. And you're right. There were some vocational rehabilitation agencies that took the position that they were unable to do in-person services, and they just basically stopped.
They shut down.
And for us, we felt that we needed to be engaged with consumers, and we just needed to find different approaches. So the technology allowed us to use things, and some of it is that universal design. You know, you have an iPhone or an iPad, and technology, assistive technology, is built in. So it's using those kinds of things so that a rehabilitation teacher from their home could engage with a consumer who was in the kitchen of their home and give them guidance and direction. So you took
advantage of what was out there to be able to provide it.
And we made some things a little bit. We took what was out there, but we using things like Zoom and all, what we did, trainings that were available as a group, we just had to make sure that we understood it so we could explain to others how they could access it. And it did prove to be quite successful.
Well, I did thank you. You made me aware that you were providing some Zoom training classes that I could participate in. And I took advantage of that. And I found the staff had figured out how to do Zoom. And the information was extremely practical. And it was kind of exciting because on an occasion, you'd get somebody from another state who was participating. I mean, the scope and range really changed. But the content was excellent. I thought they made that move towards providing those services really well.
I congratulate our staff for being creative and being willing to learn the technology and to use it. And you mentioned other states. Joe, we had people from other countries who joined us. I don't know who to send a bill to, New Zealand or to England, but they certainly took advantage of some of the
training. I was on one of those calls when somebody from UK was on there. I thought that was pretty exciting.
Yeah.
Ray, how is your experience as a consumer shaped how you approached your leadership at DBVI?
some of my consumer experience was not great in that I felt that there were times I encountered rehabilitation professionals who didn't listen well, who didn't always support or give me the information that I needed. And so my whole career in rehabilitation has been about trying to make sure that services are available, that we demonstrate that we care, and fundamentally, we show consumers respect and we treat them respectfully. And even if we cannot do something, we try to give them hope, point them to other resources, but always treat people with respect. And that comes very much from my consumer experiences and understanding that we need to meet people where they are, and people have different backgrounds. And so we should not make assumptions based on somebody's address or disability or anything else about what they can and cannot do.
So it's an it's a belief that you personally hold that people should be treated with respect, and you should acknowledge where they are and give them the hope on where they can go.
Certainly, and we cannot be all things to all people. But, you know, our job is as rehabilitation professionals is try to find a solution and to give people a path forward. So hopefully my tenure as a leader in this field reflects that thinking.
I think that's an excellent strategy or approach to providing rehabilitation services. You know, during your tenure, the Virginia Voice has enjoyed a beneficial partnership with the department. And I'm curious about how the agency has benefited from its relationship with Virginia Voice in terms of services and resources.
Well, one of the things, Joe, that we try to do is encourage people to engage and help them to connect with information. And Virginia Voice certainly represents that to me. Mm-hmm. So, amongst the things that we do when we meet someone who's newly blinded is help them to understand what's available in the community. And again, that connectivity. So if somebody chooses to subscribe to Virginia Voice to use its services, that re-engagement, that ability to get information again, to be able to feel part of the community. And when Virginia Voice has volunteers in local theaters who are describing live performances, it makes that available to the community. And the benefit to us is that, again, it helps the people. We're working to be part of the local community. It allows other members of the community to see us, to understand
it's an enhancement
of
their opportunities.
We're part of this.
Yeah,
and all of that, I think, just makes it enhances the understanding that 20% of the population has a disability, and we should not be expected to stay home and be invisible. We're part of the fabric of our local community, of the country, and the services of Virginia Voice just helps people to be out there and be engaged. And when we go talk to somebody about hiring someone, well, it just makes it that much easier if they see people.
If they've already seen them out there in the community.
Exactly.
That's an excellent point, Ray. So, Ray, what do you think will be your legacy, your biggest legacy from your time as commissioner?
Well, that's probably one of those, Joe, that somebody else would have to answer. But what I would say is this. There are a few things, like one of those that I'm proud of is this campus here in Henrico County that I think It's a beautiful campus. It's mm-hmm. a welcoming place. And one of my objectives when I first came here was to make sure that we had a place that someone felt comfortable leaving their son, their daughter, their parent here if they came here for training.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of place, if you are here, that invites you to get outside and walk around and enjoy nature. And I think we've accomplished that. But what I hope my legacy is with DBVI is just one of welcoming possibilities, being willing to try something new and not being afraid of hearing no or experiencing failure, that we're willing to step out there and innovate, create, and try new things.
So getting people to try some of the newer things that are out there and building a, I guess, a support system that allows people to feel the freedom to do that.
Well, part of it is also internally have our people, our employees at DBVI, feeling that they are supported
mm-hmm.
and able to try things differently, come up with new programs and new ideas.
Mm-hmm. Well, I definitely have seen that in my partnership with DBVI in these last over these last few years. So, Ray, I think it gets down to what's really important. So, do you have some fun retirement plans going on?
Well, I've told a couple of people my plan is for the first 30 days is to sit on my deck on rocker, and then after 30 days, I'll start rocking. No, I do have some plans. I have 6 grandchildren, and I plan to spend more time hanging out with them.
That'll be fun.
Perhaps to their chagrin. But my wife and I love to travel, so perhaps some more travel. So I'm not looking for another job, but I do expect to stay engaged and
somehow
do some
engaged.
Things. Uh-huh. Yes.
Ray, I will say over the past few years, working with you has been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed the projects where we have worked together, and it's an honor here to interview you as you're retiring, and I do wish you and Lavinia the best in your retirement.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you for listening in today on The Blind Experience with Dr. Joe Ashley.